All right, so we've been in the middle of a series. It's been taking a bit. I think we're close to almost half a year now on this. Talking about something that the Apostle Paul especially brings out in his writings, this concept called the mystery. And how the New Testament defines it is that when you really get right down to it, the whole concept of the mystery that God talked about a little bit in the Old Testament, but was hidden. It wasn't really revealed, but now it's been revealed in the New Testament. Is actually the indwelling presence of the Holy Spirit. So, you might think, well, why is the indwelling presence of the Holy Spirit a mystery? Because when you really get down and think about it, how in the world can a holy God dwell inside of a sinful people? The process to make that happen is very complicated, and it takes a long time to bring about. So God teased the concepts in the Old Testament, laid the seeds for them, and then in the New Testament, through the sacrifice of Christ, which makes the whole thing possible, now reveals it, because the mystery of God is not something that is to be done later. It's something that's done now. It's something that's a reality at this particular point. This is the indwelling Holy Spirit, and that it's not just for the Jews. Part of the issue is what we'll see when we get into Ephesians chapter 3, is that it's for the Gentiles too. Now that's a real big mystery in the Old Testament, because the Gentiles don't play really any huge part in the Old Testament. It was all about the nation of Israel. And now we see, man, it's all about the Gentiles coming in and God dwelling inside of his people. So the question is, why is that a big deal? The reason it's a big deal is because of what that actually produces in the people of God. You would think, so I mean, let's think about this for a second. The all-knowing, all-powerful God, who created everything with the spoken word, that this physical universe can't contain his majesty and his power. As a matter of fact, he has to shield himself in darkness. Because if he revealed the way he really looks inside this physical world, or inside this physical universe, it would cease to exist. Dwells inside of the Christian. The fullness of God dwells inside the church, and it dwells inside each individual Christian. What kind of a practical application is that going to have in your life on a daily basis? That's the mystery, and that's what we're trying to unpackage. We have been sold a lie as to what Christianity is in this world. We think it's, you know, when we talk about people becoming Christians, we're like, oh, you know, just make sure you go to church. Make sure you try to be a better person. And of course, make sure you put your money in the plate. Man, that's not what Christianity is. Are you kidding me? That's not what it's about at all. It's about a transformation of character that is so radical that it transforms us into walking in the footsteps of Jesus Christ. One of the reasons Jesus Christ came to this earth was to show you and me what we're supposed to be like. And then he gives us the same power that dwells within him to make it happen. That's what it's about. It's not so that we can walk on water. It's not so that we can say, let there be light, and all of a sudden there's light. It doesn't mean for us that we can turn, you know, water into wine or whatever. It's not about that, because as we looked last week, these Corinthians, man, they had all kinds of power, all kinds of miraculous gifts, and their character stunk. It was horrible. They were unloving. God doesn't care that we can do cool tricks through his power. That's not what this is about. The ultimate goal is what we're talking about over the next few weeks. The whole goal of the mystery is to produce in us a love for God that crowds every other thing out of our lives, every negative thing. We start in the book of Genesis, and you see that God created man in his own image. It was not good for man to be alone, so what did he do? He created a helper for him. And that helper helped him destroy the world. We end in the book of Revelation, chapters 21 and 22, with the helper, the church, the bride, has been made ready for her husband, because that's what this whole thing is about. It's about God creating someone that can be united with him for eternity as his bride, and the two become one. And the only thing he really wants from that bride is for her to love him with an all-encompassing, self-sacrificial love that forsakes everything else. Let me ask you a question. Husbands, wives, and those of you who want to get married someday, is it okay if your spouse cheats on you a little bit? No. Thanks for cheating. No! just a little bit. Huh? Yeah, someone want to die a little bit? I mean, What about on odd-numbered years? Just asking questions. What about weekly? What about daily? What's sin? Isn't it cheating on God? Now, what's great is that God gives us grace and forgiveness of those sins while we're being transformed. But if we have the type of love, and let me back up one more second. What's gonna keep a spouse faithful to another spouse? It's not a sense of loyalty. It's not a sense of duty. It's not a sense of, I made these vows, I have to keep them. Because that might help on the outward acts, but it's not going to help on the inward, is it? The only thing that's truly going to keep a spouse loyal to another spouse is an all-encompassing love for that other person, to where they couldn't even dream about hurting them. They will go to the absolute extreme to be 1,000% faithful in mind, body, and soul. That's what God's trying to produce in his bride. Now, he knows. I can't remember which one. I think it was Jeremiah that said it. Have you looked at the world? It's a mess. Hey, guess where I came out of? The world. So guess what I was when I came into Christianity? A mess. Thank you, Parker. You didn't have to say it, but thank you. A mess. But you know what? As soon as I got baptized, I wasn't a mess anymore. I had everything worked out. I never did anything wrong from that point forward. How many of you believe that? Some of you know me enough to know that that's not the case. God knows it's going to take some time to get us from where we were to where He needs us to be. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 to these same yahoos that were messing it up, he said, I betrothed you to Christ as a pure virgin. His bride is in the process of being sanctified and purified for that day. And what's going to be the motivating factor for us to get to that point? It's love. And when we understand the mystery, when we understand where God took us from and what He is doing and where we're going, what we're going to see when we get to Ephesians 3 in a few weeks is the only response is to bow our knee before the Father and proclaim how amazing He is to even think that we are worthy to be changed the way He's changing us, to be included in what He's doing. This is life-changing things. And when we get to this, you know, we're in this 1 Corinthians 13 passage. It's this cliche passage that's read in weddings. And I'm glad it's read in weddings. But you know what? I guarantee you that you know, I've never had the opportunity in a wedding to break this down the way we're breaking it down now. I guarantee you Jeremiah doesn't. Because if Jeremiah broke this stuff down, you've done 600 weddings? Yeah. If Jeremiah broke this stuff down, he would have been cut off at about 10. That had been like, bro, no, this is not what we paid you for. You're supposed to say nice things about us and move us along our way. 1 Corinthians 13, he says, verse 1, if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor and I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Emphasis mine. Last week we talked about the spiritual gifts. Essentially, Paul's saying, because these guys love speaking in tongues, man. And Paul said, tell you what, you can speak in every possible tongue, even a heavenly one if they existed. And if you don't have love, you are just noise. Because miraculous gifts don't change the character. Corinth was a perfect example of that. As a matter of fact, what we see a lot of times is exactly what happened in Corinth, is that spiritual gifts bred arrogance and pride. But I'm not going to rehash that. It's online. You can look at it if you want. I want to talk about verse 2. If I have the gift of prophecy, and I'm going to give you the original or the literal Greek on this with a little bit of emphasis. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all the mysteries and all the knowledge and have all the faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love. Seems like Yoda might have had something to do with this. Nothing I am. Paul gives four extremes here. All prophecy. Knowing all the mysteries. Having all the knowledge and having the actual faith to literally move mountains. He's not talking about somebody having one of these. He's talking about somebody having all four of them. This person would be the most powerful person that has ever existed on the face of the earth outside of Jesus Christ. Because as a matter of fact, there's two words for knowledge here. The first one, where he says, know all mysteries, he means having all the philosophical and intellectual knowledge in the world. That's the first knowledge. The second knowledge is the word for experiential knowledge. In other words, he knows all of the things that come with wisdom and experience. All the book knowledge, all the practical knowledge. This person would be amazing. And then they have the faith to, all the faith to actually literally move mountains, what Jesus was talking about in Matthew 17. Because remember what Jesus said in Matthew 17, 20, he says, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, be kept, rooted up and be thrown into the heart of the sea and it will be done for you. Now, you see a lot of people in the New Testament that had a lot of faith. Do we have reports of anybody literally moving a mountain in the scriptures? No, he's using that as a metaphor, as I'm not going to say exaggeration, because if God wanted you to move a mountain, if there's a mountain in front of you and God needed you to move it, guess what? He'd figure out a way, right? But what he's really talking about here is being able to do what seems to be the impossible through faith. But here Paul's actually using this as, remember how we looked last week? These are hypothetical extremes, and then lumping them all together. Look at the verdict. If I know the mystery, so the mystery of Christ is included in knowing all of the mysteries. So if I know this mystery that God has, that he's been preparing for his people since the foundation of the world, his entire, matter of fact, in Ephesians chapter 3, he says that this is the eternal purpose of God. You ever wondered why God did any of this? What was his reason? What was his purpose? It completely revolves around the mystery of Christ in us. The entire reason the universe was created was for this. It's why you exist. It's why I exist. He says, if I know all of that perfectly, and I've got the faith to implement it, all of the faith, but I don't have love, I am literally nothing. Think about that kind of a person existing. Like I said, the most knowledgeable, wise, most powerful person ever to exist outside of Christ. He says, you can have all of that, but if you don't have the very most basic component of love, you are literally nothing. It's absolute negation. Total spiritual worthlessness. Vanity. Notice how he's escalating it too. In verse 1, they were just noise. Now they themselves are literally nothing. See, the entire purpose of what God is doing is in revealing this mystery to us is to create the kind of love that is necessary to produce the kind of transformation that he's looking for. I'm trying to say that the love is the only way. Love of God and love of others is the only way this is going to happen. You will do anything. You will overcome any obstacle if you love someone enough. You absolutely will. And you won't do it for any other reason. That is why I'm convinced. And as I've been looking through the mystery stuff, I'm actually, remember how I said last week, oh, this is perfect, being the middle branch of the mystery out of the 12. This is number 6. Now I'm thinking, you know what? I think this is going to be the last one. Because it's all going to head, when I write the book, I'm writing a book on this. I think this is going to be the last chapter. Because this is what it's all about. This is what it's trying to produce. So isn't it interesting that one of the number one things the world is trying to change and Satan is trying to change is what is love? People boil it down to an emotion, to a feeling, to a whim. I just don't feel like I love you anymore. So people split. Love is not an emotion. Love produces emotion. But first and foremost, primarily, love begins in the mind. It doesn't stay there. In a couple of months, my wife and I will celebrate 31 years of marriage. And I can tell you now, before God, that I love her more now than I ever have in my life. And that produces an intense emotional state within me. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm always like, I love you. And it's not like that. That would be weird. But having that type of love for her is manifesting more and more and more in my actions today than it was years ago. I'll do way more for her. And I mean, I would have died for her a long time ago, but there's a lot of times I think we can deceive ourselves into thinking, oh, I would die for somebody, but we're not actually living for them. I guarantee you, if you're not living for the person that you love, you will never die for them. Don't ever think that that is some sort of a thing that we can switch, that we can flip in our heads. That doesn't work like that. But it starts first in the mind. Now, this thing that he says here in verse 2 is a huge rebuke to the Corinthians. Because what was their prized possession? Their prized possession was knowledge and the gifts, but they didn't have love. So think about this. He's saying, if I had somebody that had all knowledge and knew all the mysteries and had all the practical knowledge and had all the faith, something that the Corinthians didn't have. So he's building up this huge mega man way above and beyond what the Corinthians were. And then he knocks them down and says, if they don't have love, they're nothing. What's that say about the Corinthians? They were nothing as well if they didn't have love, because they weren't even as great as this mythical, hypothetical person that Paul was talking about. Now, I had this really cool line for my transition, but I don't have enough time to go through it. But I'll give you the line anyway, because we'll end on this for next week, because we have the congregational meeting and stuff, or the planning meeting, so I want to make sure we have time for that. You know, as God was talking about this love through the mystery, in verse 3, he gets it even deeper. So as my favorite infomercial personality from the 90s and 2000s would say, but wait, there's more. How many of you guys remember Ron Popeil? Who stayed up late at night back in the day watching Ron Popeil infomercials? Anybody? Oh, Phil remembers. Okay. Remember, he was the guy that had that roaster thing. Set it and forget it. See, there we go. He's deader than a doornail now, so he ain't selling anything. But man, I feel bad for this new generation, because if you can't sleep, a lot of times, you know, they just take out their phone and start doom scrolling or whatever the case is. Back in my day, we used to turn on the TV and watch infomercials. Man, you ever do that, Dale? Dale used to put the A-tracks in. I forgot. Yeah. Don't tell me you didn't have an 8-track player in your car, because I know you did. He still has an 8-track player in his car. Yeah.